Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Great I Am Radio, raising the vibration on everyday life matters with heart and soul. Here's your host, Rebecca Johns.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. Rebecca Johns coming to you live, despite some technical glitching that tried to happen and hold us down today. We're on the air. We don't let anything hold us back here at Great I Am Radio. My name is Rebecca Johns. I am your host of the show. It is my privilege to come to you each week with conversations to engage, activate, and awaken your great I am, that human spirit. What is it that makes us so different in the animal kingdom, but our ability to be conscious, our ability to be aware, our ability to step back and reflect? We're not just instinctive. We're not just intuitive. As a holistic health practitioner and purpose coach, I work with people to give them a chance for that pit stop in life. You know, it's not often that we just get a pit stop in life. We're so busy running around that track. We're so busy chasing the results, those proverbial carrots. And all right, I admit it's not always proverbial. I know you need a house. You need to pay your bills. You need food on the table. There are material things that we're chasing, but how often are we really chasing them? And how little do we have the experience of our true power being present and active in such a way where we're drawing things to us? And very rarely are we really taking care of ourselves along the way. I mean, I know I'm guilty of that. I know I'm guilty of, in my efforts to perform and produce and achieve, letting some really important things in my life slip, including my health, including me. I read something recently that said, on average, the average human being spends the last 20% of their lives being ill and decaying until death. 20%. So here you are, living life, chasing the dream, working, paying bills, raising a family. Many of us for retirement, right? Oh, I can't wait to retire. Just to live that last 20% of your life falling apart until death? I really feel like there's got to be a different way. And as I work with clients to deliberately create their lives, I see it. I see the intervention. I see the interruption. And it's different for each of us. Different parts, different people. People different are different in different parts of the world. People are different from socioeconomic backgrounds. People, maybe it's different even between men and women. And that is why my guest today is on the show. I found this gentleman through LinkedIn. And you know how some people, they've got that certain something, that je ne sais quoi, they say, that kind of catches your attention. They've got a spark, a light, a message. They've got something to them. That's this guy. He's a high-performance coach and an author. Dean Colson is from the United Kingdom and an author acclaimed for his book entitled Thrive, which gives the reader a holistic approach to high-performance living without abandoning true health. And Dean helps a lot of people, but his focus is working with business leaders, CEOs, people that are really driving and producing and required to produce at a high level. And he supports them thriving that life, in that life, without the impact of stress and overwhelm and self-limiting beliefs. And what stood out to me when I found his work was that his focus is on men and men's health. And he specifically aims at achievement for elements of health being mental, emotional, physical, spiritual, or energetic. And he has a great philosophy on how they're all synergistically linked. So that men, and I mean everyone, you're going to hear him talk today and you'll be like, well, that's good for women too. But so that men in particular can access true power in all areas of life, but also without compromising their true self-expression. As I began my work with the Godly Woman over the last few years, my focus was women on purpose. I felt very strongly that if we, the women, could remediate our soil, so to speak, that men, the seed, would have a greater chance at thriving in our presence. We would have a chance to be more fruitful with them. And so I'm so excited to introduce to you this guest. So help me welcome the coach for men living holistically healthy, Mr. Dean Colson. Welcome to the airwaves with me, Dean.
Thanks, Rebecca. Thanks for that awesome introduction.
Absolutely, my pleasure. It's certainly warranted. I absolutely love the content that you put out. It's, you know, there are people that are out in social media posting for business, and that's fair. Posting for fun, and that's fair. But you are, you really put stuff out that compels people to think and reconsider how they're thinking and living. Can you tell us about you and about how you even got introduced to this life of wanting to lead other people to something greater?
Sure, yeah. I really like to do something that is passionate for me. You know, it started when we were told that we couldn't have kids. My wife and I were told, a long time ago, early 2000s, that we couldn't have kids. We tried 5 years, and we told it was medically impossible. But that just fueled the fire. At first, we tried IVF twice, but it didn't work. And by which time, I was looking at what else was possible. I'm a big believer, and there's always a way. For me, I thought, okay, let's see what else is going on. And I settled on nutrition and health and what health actually meant, because at the time, I just accepted the government's sort of strategy and guide on that. And, you know, the doctors kind of followed along with that. But it's just, you know, it didn't sit right with me. So I actually booked a session with a nutritionist, which was, you know, quite a rare thing back there. I had to get out the yellow pages. There was no internet. There was no search engines then. And we went to see this nutritionist who blew our world apart. We got home that night after 2 hours speaking with her. And we looked in our cupboards for, like, to make some food. And they were full, but there was just nothing to eat. It was like a complete eye-opener. It was a massive shock. And from there, I was just, okay, what else is possible? So I started reading all the books I could find on nutrition, on health. I contacted the authors. I wanted to know everything they knew. And then I found a doctor called Dr. Marilyn Glenville, who had a book, Solutions for Infertility. Got in touch with those. They had a coaching. We could coach with them. And as a result of working with them and changing our habits, how we saw health, my wife was pregnant 3 months later.
I mean, if that doesn't make you think twice, what does?
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things where it's undeniable. The truth is undeniable. There's no other way that was possible. We were told it was impossible. So with that in mind, that happened. Then my wife was pregnant. Then she went through quite a hard pregnancy, we'll say. She suffered a lot with what we thought was morning sickness at first, but then it turned out it was anxiety through things that happened in her past. The pregnancy triggered that, but I didn't understand that at the time, although I did. My intuition was telling me it was something to do with trauma, so I was trying to educate myself with trauma after the nutrition and the health. And you know, my son was born, you know, healthy. He's 18 now. He just turned 18 last year. So, you know, it was a bittersweet thing. But then that just opened my eyes to more things. So if it's not just physical health, what else do we need to look at? What other elements? So I started looking at the mental side. What does mental health actually mean? What is, you know, how does the brain work? Started looking at neuroscience and spirituality, and just it snowballed from there. I wanted to understand health as a complete paradigm, not just elements of it.
Extraordinary. You know, I remember when we spoke first and you told me the story, part of what touched me is how much it's my story.
Okay. Yes.
I was told I couldn't have children. I saw a naturopathic doctor for something completely unrelated, one who identified that there had been an imbalance in my left ovary that had been long standing for years, and gave me some things. And I remember her saying it, oh, I'll just give you some things for it along with the other stuff, because I went for something else and I can't even remember what else I had gone for. I don't even remember. Yeah. But I remember her saying, do you know that you have an infection in your left ovary? And I said, no. And she said, it looks like it's been pretty long standing. Don't worry. Don't worry. I'll never forget it. Don't worry. I'll give you a little something for it along with everything else.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that was November of 2006. I was pregnant in January.
Wow. Powerful.
And so, you know, Dean, your finger is on a hot button. By the way, I also had tremendous anxiety.
Yeah.
And what I was able to identify was that the trauma was the pregnancy, because I had really gotten myself in a mindset like, well, that's impossible for me, I guess. Got doctors told me it was impossible. I didn't go to her to seek pregnancy. I went to her for something else. So I remember going back in my first trimester and talking to her and really having like an emotional meltdown about it. And we discovered together, as she, you know, she was just great. She was able to tap into, like you, like me, the mind, heart, body, soul of a person. And so I was able to see, you know, this pregnancy itself is triggering me, because I kind of had arranged the rest of my life based on I couldn't have kids.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We were considering whole new careers. I worked in IT at the time. My wife was just in an office. We were looking at becoming dive instructors.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Getting pregnant will have you reconsider that plan, huh, Dean?
Yeah, just a bit.
Oh man, that's great. That's great. How wonderful. Well, happy birthday. Happy 18th to your son. And so there you were, unexpectedly but gratefully pregnant. How did the pregnancy go? Was she, you know, because a lot of times women who've been having trouble, or men who've been having trouble with conception, often have a lot of calamity in the pregnancy cycle. Then they're not able to take the pregnancy to fulfillment, or their problems with the baby. Talk to us about how that pregnancy went. Did everything work out well? Was it a positive experience for her in general?
Absolutely not. No. As I said, with the anxiety, I just persisted the whole time. I think it was three and a half months in, she was admitted to a psychiatric hospital. Just because they didn't know what was going on. They tried the most powerful anti-nausea drugs, because she felt just really sick all the time. And even when those medications didn't make any difference whatsoever, that's when they looked at it more psychological than physiological. And as a result, there was no real connection there, because she was suffering so much. It was very, very bittersweet, the fact that we'd tried for so long, and then when it happened and she was pregnant, then she just couldn't enjoy it at all. And she struggled with anxiety for a number of years afterwards. It took a lot of effort for her to work out how to, you know, heal herself. So it was one of those things where you know, I can't really recall a lot of the pregnancy because there was a, you know, there was a lot of pain there. So there's a lot of things that had to be processed after the fact.
Yeah.
To move forward.
And how about your son? Is he a healthy young man today?
Yeah, absolutely. He's 6'4". He's taller than me. He's at college at the moment, studying. He doesn't like, to be fair, I'll be honest, he doesn't like, didn't like school, and he's found out he doesn't like college. That's just not his thing. So, you know, he's trying to figure out what he's going to be doing next, which is all good. But yeah, he's a healthy lad. He's a great kid.
Bless his heart. Well, when I was that age, I really wasn't interested in that stuff either. So. I'd say he might be kind of normal, actually.
Yes, I would agree with you there. I would agree with you there. He just needs to figure out what he wants to do with his life, which is, you know, I'm here, always there to support him. Just as, you know, I've always said, you know, you don't have to do one thing. Just do lots of things until you find something you love doing.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
Amen to that. Sometimes if something isn't pulling you immediately, the process of elimination really works to your favor.
Yeah, absolutely. I did computer science for a lot of years. I had my own consultancy. It wasn't until 2010 when I realized I was not here for that. I think, 2010 was when I changed careers, but it was before that when I kind of, you know, did all the work through the pregnancy, and then I realized that I could help a lot of people with health, and a lot of people were struggling. And that's why, you know, that's why I changed careers.
You brought me to my next question, which was, how do you take truly a life-altering experience that you and your wife had? How do you take that and turn it into, and I know it's your business, but your work is very ministerial. You are touching the mind, heart, body, and soul of a human being. How did you come to that you were going to take this significant experience of your life and turn it into an opportunity to help other people, to make it a business? And why specifically the focus on men? I know I just asked you like 20 questions, but walk us.
I know
you pick up what I'm putting down, so I'm just going to throw them at you, and then you just fill in the gaps.
Yeah, so what happened initially was, I'm a martial artist. I've been a martial artist since I was 15 years old, so it's over 35 years, let's say. And I've studied, you know, a lot of different styles, so I really buy into the martial arts ethos, the spirituality of martial arts. And so fitness was always something that I was passionate about ever since I was in my mid-teens, because my mom was ill in my mid-teens. She was always said it was bad with her nerves, but it was anxiety and depression. And I always said that I would never... I never wanted to end up that way. Not, you know, because I couldn't help my mom there. And as a, like a young teenager, then my mom wasn't always there and like in a present kind of way. So I was vowed that that would never happen to me. So I kind of got obsessed with training and martial arts. And then when I got to around 2010, I decided, you know, I can actually help people. So I actually started a fitness business, an outdoor fitness business. That's what I did. So it was really about getting people into shape, understanding what health was and nutrition. But the thing with that was, is people got obsessed with fat loss instead of health because they thought that's what health was. And so nutrition was something that I always thought, well, I'm telling you what to do, but you're not doing it. And I didn't understand why. That's why I started studying neuroscience and mindset at the time, because I wouldn't understand why people have the information, but they're still not doing it. And so by understanding neuroscience, understand what happens when people feel a certain way, and then we start reacting and keep doing the same things over and over. And then that led me on to opening up my coaching business. Initially, it wasn't just for men, but I had this resonance. I started, like, it was men who was like high-performing men who are companies, I mean, people who owned companies, or CEOs of companies, who wanted to improve their nutrition and health, but quickly understood that they were putting their own barriers. Even these, you know, these high achievers were still putting barriers, because we're all human. We still have the same things that we have to deal with. And so I really just had that resonance. I think when I was working with these guys, they really understood it and got it. And being a man myself, I had my own, you know, I've worked through my own issues and understanding these issues and having that knowledge. I felt, you know, I can help these guys, because men are really good at not sharing. They're not, you know, they don't, they're usually lone wolves. They think they've got to do everything themselves. There's a deep shame with asking for help. And so this is why I sort of gravitated towards working with men.
God bless your work, Dean.
Thank you.
I really appreciate the honesty about your process. And so I want to turn a little bit to talking about men.
Okay.
In my work with women, I often work with women who are hurt.
Yeah.
And hurt by men.
Yeah.
And hurt by men who they love.
Yeah.
It's taken me all of my 50 years to realize that a man can absolutely love you and absolutely betray you.
Yeah.
And that can be a little confusing for women. And so a lot of the work that I do with women is explaining how men do compartmentalize to survive differently than we do.
Yeah.
And how before they could have ever betrayed their partner, they betrayed themselves, and that betrayal has likely been going on most of, if not all of their lives, because it was a conditioning to betray themselves. It was a conditioning to you're a big boy, don't cry, or you're a boy,
yep,
you don't do that, or you know, you're a boy, you're a man when you're two, you're a man, act like it, you know, man up, you know, and you're not even out of diapers yet, and you're being told to man up.
That's true. Yeah.
And
also,
so, yes, please.
I was just going to say, and also, men, especially in the Western world, when they get to adolescence, they haven't got a leader to show them how to be men. That's gone in the Western world now. You know, you've seen tribes in Africa and South America where they still have these initiations where, you know, you become a man at 13 and you hang around men and, you know, they learn these ways. But now I see that less and less. I actually see, you know, boys in men's bodies. You know, they don't know how to deal with anything that's difficult or hard. And so
all right,
I was
I told you, you're always answering my question in advance. So here's what I want you to talk about. I want you to talk about that in the ways that you've discovered that our culture, by what it's doing or the absence of what it's doing, and what we're not doing. Can you talk to us about some of those things that like that are culturally in our conditioning where we're making men into what this is? Please talk about that.
Yeah, well, we're just losing that mentality, that experience, those, you know, back in the day when tribes and elders where, you know, they knew how to, if you go strip it right back, you go down to, you know, how men had to hunt, had to provide. But now men don't even understand that. They don't understand. They just grow up, you know, everything's so easy. They don't have to hunt. You know, you can buy food on any corner and they don't really understand what being a man's about, having this higher purpose, understanding, you know, how they can, you know, how they fit in the world. They've kind of lost that now. Because there doesn't seem to be a defined role. So there's no meaning, there's no purpose defined. So the men feel, or young men feel quite lost. They don't really know what's, how to effectively express themselves. So they internalize it, which is why, you know, they grow up with a lot of rage, a lot of anger, and no outlet of how to do it. You know, if we look at masculine energy, for example, you know, everyone's got an element of masculine and feminine within them, both men and women. But masculine energy really is about being assertive, understanding, being true to themselves, being certain and have that inner confidence. But when you don't really know who you are, or you haven't been around people who can guide you how to deal with these emotions and create mental and emotional resilience, then it can just go off, you know, this energy can be destructive, which is what, you know, you were talking about before, you know. So it's really by not having a firm sense of self, then they end up not doing much at all. And then there's a lot of very angry young men out there with energy that they don't know how to displace.
I'm going to jump around for a second, so roll okay. with me. You focus quite a bit on men who are successful, though. So how is it that we're seeing, and I have a sense that I know the answer, but I really would like you to kind of break it down, because there are some men who will say, yeah, but I'm paying the bills. I'm putting money on the yeah. table, so don't worry about it, right? I
yeah.
got my million-dollar home. I got my boat. I got four cars. My kids are in college paid. My wife's wearing whatever jewelry and clothes she wants. I'm doing
yeah.
fine.
Yeah, which is not true at all, because that's just – another way of distracting, you know. A lot of successful men focus on businesses because they don't know how to deal with relationships or health, or, you know, how to deal with their own emotions. So it's easier to then throw themselves into some other focus, and it's usually to do with business and business success, and think, well, if once I get all this money, then I'm going to be happy, I'm going to be fulfilled. And then they get to this place, and then they think, hold on, I still feel exactly the same. Nothing has changed other than the fact I have money in the bank. And because of that, this is the crux of what I do with men, is the fact that, you know, when men, you know, men's mental health will always continue to suffer while they refuse to get a handle on their emotional health. They don't know how to deal with emotions, but because emotional pain is painful, when we always move away from pain, then we'll always then create some displacement, some distraction, some sedation, whether that's successful men working all hours, or it could be the fact that, you know, they don't know how to deal with home life, so then they'll go out with their mates or their friends and they'll drink, or, you know, they'll use whatever distraction technique. But no amount of hiding will allow you to face the emotional landmines that cause men that pain. You know, there's no amount of avoidance which, you know, will allow you to escape from the metaphorical prisons that men keep themselves in. And there's just like there's no amount of blame that'll allow you to take back control of your life. Because that's when and that always happens when you avoid the triggers that, you know, create your unhappiness, and that affects your mental health, and that's not healing. Avoidance is not healing. Repressing emotions and that cause you pain doesn't make those triggers go away. Healing only happens when, you know, when you are triggered, and instead of reacting in fear and moving away from that pain with some, you know, whatever protection mechanism or pain avoidance story or action you have, you're able to stop and you're able to turn around and have the courage to fully feel it, to face it, to fully feel it, to embrace it, to move into that pain, that pattern, the story, and be able to walk out, you know, with a different ending. But it takes courage. It's the hardest thing anyone can do, men or women. But obviously we're talking about men here. And that's why when there's pain, you know, that discomfort, they'll try and move away from it. And so instead of being liberated and freeing themselves and freeing their soul, they still feel imprisoned. They just don't know it.
I love this. My clients will often hear me say three words: feel,
yeah.
deal, and heal. You've got to
yeah.
feel it. You got to deal with it in order to heal it.
Yeah,
feel,
absolutely.
Feel and heal. And we're not, you know, and I started the conversation this morning. I said we're not culturally already positioned to take pit stops. You know, if you're any of you that are listening are into race cars at all, those cars whip around the track repeatedly,
yeah.
but they get something. They get a pit stop, and it's brief. It's brief compared to the race time, the time that they're out on the track. They're earning those, you know, a few seconds at the pit stop, but they've got a crew.
Yeah.
They've got a comprehensive crew. And that crew in those few seconds is in there making adjustments. They reflect. They see what's going on. They detect anything that's out of whack. And they correct it. Reflect, detect, correct. I love little three-word things like that. But so in order to feel, deal, and heal, you've got to reflect, detect, and correct. And so, you know, we're talking about men who, in this case, who are successful. We're talking about men who are running businesses. They are handling large amounts of money. They are delegating to teams. It's not that these are not smart men. It's that they're emotionally weak in dealing with what comes up for them. And listen, you know, in my work, we talk about being a hero and a zero. And we love being where we're a hero, and we can't stand spending time where we're a zero. And so that avoidance that you're talking about with men, of course they're not going to want to hang out in those areas of life where they're their weakest. They're going to want to be where they're the strongest, where they're shining, where they have strength, where they can produce and show it and be confident. Like you said, assertive, true, certain.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. And so let's shift a little bit, because I realize the world culturally is just all about that. You know, we want women to be pretty and men to be strong, you know, like that's what we do.
Yeah,
so I understand why men want to hold up external crust, that image in the world of, you know, a certain amount of swag, if you will. I get it. But now let's talk about that man goes home. He's got a wife. He's with a woman who loves him. She wants to be there for him. She wants to hear where things are not working, and she wants to hear about where his heart is. Where is the rub? Where are men and women, in your opinion, missing the boat with each other? Where are we missing opportunity? Whether because I, as woman, am missing the point of something with you, therefore cannot connect and communicate properly with you, or because you, man, are not quite present and missing something with me. Talk about where you see this in this interplay between the relationship of men and women who are in relationship and love each other.
I think sometimes you've got to understand how love is actually felt. So I'm talking about the five love languages. I'm sure you understand that. So I think firstly, just understanding what fills your own love tank. So what you might think, you know, what might fill your love tank, it could be physical touch, for example, you know, just being able to hug or hold hands, might not be your partner's. So if you keep hugging and touching all the time, but her love language is, I don't know, affirmations or acts of service, doing things for them. If you keep doing that, it's just, there's a mismatch there. It's like, that doesn't, you know, they'll think, well, that doesn't make me feel good. Because I actually like, you know, if you just did this for me, then that would show me that you love me. But there's such a mismatch between people who don't understand what makes them feel loved, what makes them feel heard, what makes them feel seen. And I think that's a good basis. I don't think it's the be-all and end-all, but it's a good foundation to understand what makes you feel loved, what your partner, how, you know, what makes your partner feel loved. And by understanding that is probably the first step for me with relationships. After that, it's all about truth, being truthful, even if you think it'll cause pain. Because if you're doing it from a place of love, you're not doing it with any malice. You're not trying to purposely help or hurt your partner. But sometimes you have to be truthful. You have to say, look, okay, this is how I feel. This is not how you're making me feel. This is just how I feel about it. Yes, there'll be triggers. And the triggers, of course, are a good thing when you understand that triggers are a gift, things that you get to look at, process, and let go of. But when you don't have that awareness, you can actually feel hurt. And so a lot of couples, men and women, obviously I'm just talking from a men's perspective, they'll not talk. They'll close up. They'll shut up. And then, of course, the other stuff is men hold on to shame, deep-rooted. I don't need any help. I should be able to provide. I should be able to deal with this. I should be able to do, you know, look after my family. And then that creates, you know, another disconnect. So it's really understanding what makes you feel loved and how your partner, you know, sees love, but then being very truthful. And that's a very hard thing to do.
I'm glad you said that, because I could hear the voices of thousands of women behind me going, yeah, I'm going to get my husband to talk about all that, Dean.
I know, so, it's difficult.
So
yeah, I get
let me just do my sisters a favor here and get some free advice. How do we as women, and these are personal relationships. I want to ask you the same question, though, as a woman in business, though. I'd like you to answer this two places, if you could. And I know I'm putting you on the hot seat on behalf of all men. So I want to just go ahead and caveat and disclaim that, you know, your man is his own person, and what we are talking about are general terms here today.
Yeah, yeah.
So let us not pretend that there aren't exceptions to every rule, but I want to I remember when Brian and I were going through just a heck of a time and really not doing well in our marriage. And I went to a therapist on my own. And I specifically found a man. I'd always wanted to work with women. I had so much baggage with men. I was safer with women, so I would always go to women. And this time I went for a man, and I was on a hunt, Dean. I was on a hunt because it had to be a particular man, because I knew that I was going to get him into session and say, okay, I need you to answer on behalf of men. Okay, I need to be able to ask some man somewhere, why do you all act like this? Why do you do this when I do this? This doesn't make sense to me. So you are kind of that guy right now. You are the
wonderful.
You're the guy that's going to answer. Why do y'all do this? So Dean, let's talk on a personal side. What, you know, I'm a woman. I'm in a relationship with a man. I love him. We've got issues. We have this dynamic though. Whenever we go to talk about something, it turns into an argument.
Yeah.
And I end up highly emotional, upset. He ends up shutting down or some version of that to me, because what you're saying is know yourself, know your partner, know what makes you experience safety and love and respect, and know what has them experience love and safety, respect. Be honest, you know, be truthful with love, be truthful. How do I even get those conversations started with my man who there's a pattern of that not being possible with? What are some tips you can give me, the woman, for that, to do that?
First really is to create a safe environment. I know it sounds very simplistic, but so many men, when we're in a reactive state, for example, I mean, this is a human thing, not just a men thing, but when we feel unsafe, we'll react and we'll keep going and doing the same thing we always do. And if that's, you know, if there's an argument coming or you're going to talk about this again, then they'll just go from a reactive place because they don't feel safe emotionally. And really, that's what it comes down to. Men don't feel safe emotionally when there's relationship issues. And so I get the fact that the reason why they don't want to talk to their partners is because they don't want to hurt them. I know this because from personal experience, I can only really talk about it from the men I've worked with, specifically with relationships, and of course my own experience, is the fact that I didn't want to hurt my wife. I thought I would drive away. Sometimes with men, like, for example, myself, I had a deep-rooted belief of abandonment from when I was 3 years old, when my mom left me in hospital when I was getting a procedure in hospital. She didn't want to leave, but that's all I saw when I was standing, holding onto the bars of the cot or the crib and looking out as my mom left me in pain. And so that to me, you know, said that people will abandon you, especially those that love you. And so that deep-rooted belief went through my life, and I used to push people away to prove that unconscious belief true. And that's what humans do. We consciously might want one thing, but if unconsciously we believe something else, there's always going to be a conflict, and that's really hard.
Yes, we're busy proving ourselves right about that subconscious belief.
Yeah. Yeah.
Despite the conscious desire.
Yes, exactly that.
Yeah.
Exactly that.
Spot. Well, and I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, well, you know, women are doing that while we're trying to talk to our men, right? I love you.
Yeah.
I want you to open up to me, but I'm yelling at you.
I'm
yelling at you. Why don't you talk to me? And it's like,
which
well,
makes the man
that
feel
right
more
there. Right, yeah. You're doing it right now. I'm right there, right there. You're that. That's not safe.
Yeah. And so it's about, for me, men and women being truthful and being able to create a safe environment and not allowing their emotion to kick off. Now, that's, of course, easier said than done. But having that awareness that they're having a reaction to something, and being able to pause and breathe and just be truthful. I'm going to give you an example. I could be trying to tell something to my wife, for example, but I don't know how to do it. So all I can ever do is express my truth. I can, and as long as I'm as clear, exact, specific, precise is something I always think about, you know, being as clear as possible. So for example, I could say, look, I'm hurting right now. This isn't a do to you. This is just how I feel. I'm not getting this from you, or this is how I feel. It might, whether that's true or not, that's how I'm seeing it. And of course, that initially can cause that trigger from the partner, because they're going to say, well, that's not how I see it, because they see love in a different way. Comes back to love languages a bit. But it's just understanding that your partners, allow them to speak without being triggered. Even if you are triggered, allow them to speak. Allow them to finish what they're saying without reacting. That is a big thing for women and men. You know, if it's the other way around, if, you know, women want to express themselves, the same thing with men, it's just being able to stop talking. But I get, you know, if men haven't matured, if they've been like mommy's boys, for example, if they haven't had a father figure or haven't been around men when they were younger, they might not be emotionally mature enough to understand how to do that. And I think this is something I'm seeing with a lot of men, is the lack of awareness and being able to do that. A lack of awareness that they can take control if they just stop. Instead of reacting, stop, pause, find the safe space to be able to express.
I work a lot with my ladies on creating safety within themselves so that they're not waiting for it from someone else.
Yeah.
And that's a process, getting to know that you have choices and no one really ultimately controls you but you. And there are processes that I put myself and my clients through to access that. Right. Because that's part of my baggage too, that I'm not safe as a woman. That's part of my background story.
Yeah.
And so I agree with you. I agree that we each have to take responsibility for that. We come with a predisposition to our emotional state, and that in a relationship, we're going to trigger that in each other.
Yeah.
And that the best way to get through a conversation or a conflict with your mate is genuinely to let them share their perspective without it having to land on you like it's there to hurt you.
Yeah. And that's
I would
key.
Imagine. Yeah, go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, that's the key. It's like, as long as you express yourself without any malice, from a place of love, and saying, this is what I'm feeling right now, then that's a starting point with, you know, what to work with. And if that's triggering or resonating with the partner, then that's something they have to work through as well. And you can do it together. You don't have to do it separately. And you see, you know, it could be, okay, you've expressed that, and I thank you. That's made me feel hurt. I don't know why that is, because I know you're not trying to hurt me on purpose. As long as they're having a civil conversation, not yelling and throwing things at each other, I get that. But, you know, just being able to be, I suppose you could say, being adults. I think when we lose, it's one of the things where I do, something I do with myself right now is if I get annoyed with something or I shout or something, I think, ooh, I'm not being an adult here. I'm not behaving in an adult way. Or when I hear adults say, I don't like broccoli, or I don't like this, or I don't like that, all I hear is children. Because there's an emotional block at some point in their lives. They were force-fed broccoli or whatever happened. But it's the same story playing. At that point, energetically, the energy is blocked. That there's a trapped emotion there. And anytime that food stuff comes up, that's the child comes out. And so I always remind myself, oh, am I being like an adult or a child? So by being able to sit down and talk instead of shouting and losing tempers, you know, that's a childlike behavior for me.
That is fantastic. What a great, you know, sometimes I coach my clients to identify red flags. Hey, if this is happening, likely this is coming up next, so we can intervene early.
Yeah.
Raising your voice, beginning to yell at your partner, what that's a red flag. That should be an alarm going off that we're triggered. Something very young in me is triggered. Something very wounded in me is triggered. Okay, we've only got a few minutes left, so let me shift gears just a little bit. Now I would like you to guide us how do we deal with that same male personality in the workplace? Some of us, you know, women are in the work world. I don't know if men know that. It's been about 70, 80 years. But we're in the work world, and we're not going anywhere. If anything, we're becoming more of a force in corporate America, in entrepreneurship, in ministry, in all forms of education. So now we're dealing with that same perhaps not emotionally comfortable and developed man in a workplace where emotions aren't the thing. How do we deal with that? Because we're not going to say, hey, that's your three-year-old wounded boy coming out. How do we deal with that? I mean, we might know it. I might look at a man in a professional environment who's behaving poorly and say, wow, your three-year-old is really showing in a $2,000 suit, right?
Yeah.
Your three-year-old is showing. But I can't say that necessarily. What's the approach in professional environments to cultivate the best among men?
All you can ever do is control yourself. You can only ever be the best version of yourself. You can't make anyone feel a certain way. You can't coerce, not in a positive way anyway. All you can ever do is deal with what resonates with you. Because at any moment, all you ever have is a choice of how you actually react or respond. That's the choice when it comes to something, because you can't control what people think about you or what, you know, what they're going to say about you. All you can choose is how you react or respond to that. And by doing that, you retain your own personal power. You're not allowing them to take your attention away or make you feel a certain way. And if there is, and if they do, then there's some trigger there that you need to deal with. There's some resonance there. But all you can ever do is work on the best version of yourself.
Yes, and hold people to account, right? Like, no doubt, if someone's out of line, for those of you that are women in a workplace, there's no reason that you have to tolerate a man being out of pocket.
No, absolutely not.
Somebody out of pocket, then they're held to account. But by the same token, we have to thicken up our skin. We have to recognize that people are people. People are going to do what people do. And we can't constantly just have our switches flipped just because someone behaves a certain way.
Yeah. And it comes down to emotional and mental resilience. You know, where is your attention held? Are you allowing it to be taken? And, you know, like, for example, a lot of the time, you know, your attention might go to someone saying some off-the-cuff remark, which affects your hour, your day, your week, your month, you know, something that said that derogatory, and we allow them to take our attention away. That's taking your sovereign away. You know, like, self-sovereignty is the ultimate power of yourself, self-mastery. So it's always being able to check, where's my attention right now? You know, and that's not just for criticism, that's for adulation, that's for praise as well. You know, there's nothing wrong with receiving praise, as long as it doesn't go to your head or it doesn't affect you in some way, because either way, it's taking your attention away from yourself.
Absolutely. You know, I'm in Christian ministry and I tell people, Jesus wasn't won over by cheers or jeers. There wasn't these people are cheering for me, these people are booing for me, which is more, that's going to determine my feeling about myself and my mission. He's on mission. I'm on mission. You're on mission.
Yeah.
Each of us in life, we have a mission. It's our own personal funky flag that we get to wave in life. And we're entitled to that sovereignty, that mastery, that autonomy, that choice of creating and expressing ourselves. And so men and women alike are really being, I think, Dean, given a chance to grow up, which is where I'd like to close with this conversation, is parents.
Okay.
Talk to us moms and dads. We're raising boys. We're raising men. And we're raising them in a world that is so screwed up. Talk to us about maybe a couple of the things that you feel are important for parents to be doing with their boys to help construct that bridge to manhood in a healthier, holistically more conscious and conscientious way.
I think, firstly, they need to know that they're loved. I think this whole, you know, especially when I was young, I can't remember my dad ever saying that he loved me. I don't think that he did. You know, I know he did, but he never vocalized it. He worked away a lot, so I didn't see him a lot. Or he worked night shift. So I always remember craving his attention and never really getting it. I remember playing football or soccer for the school team. And when he sometimes used to turn up when he wasn't working. And that just lifted me. So it's just letting them know, first of all, that you care. I think that's really, really important. Because I don't think that affects them in a negative way at all. I think a lot of people think, oh, they've got to, you know, there's this tough love thing. But that doesn't work. And the other thing is, for me, is allowing them to express themselves, allowing them to know that they can talk to you and you actually listen instead of trying to give advice. I see that a lot. Instead of, you know, trying to make them a version of you or the benefit of your experience, allow them to speak. I think that's very powerful for young men, because then we kind of get lost in who we're supposed to be. We don't really know. And then they see a version of, you know, for example, you know, I've done martial arts for a long time. I've done, you know, I've worked in business. But when I was younger, I was very quiet in my teens. I didn't know how to express myself at all. Didn't like talking to people. I think being able to showing young men that it's okay to be able to express themselves in a positive way, you know, being able to allow themselves to get their emotions out in a healthy way. If they're frustrated, let them vent. Not by smashing things up, obviously, but, you know, allowing them to say what they feel without any kind of criticism or shutting them down.
Yeah.
That allows us to, you know, just so allowing them to know that showing emotions is a good thing and not a bad thing, which is what we're conditioned and have been for a long time.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you, God bless our men. I often say that we've gotten it backwards. We're in a world that is driving this, you know, I don't need a man, the mentality. And I mean, to those people, you know, that we all have choice, but I do. I need men. I needed my dad. I need my husband. I need my sons. I need the men in the world who are building buildings and carving roads and really holding the responsibility of procreation of life itself. I tell people, women always have a reason not to be having sex and pursuing that way. If it was up to women to procreate, there'd be 3 women and 1 million cats on the planet. There'd be nobody. Men are resilient. Men hold the seed of life. Men are literally biologically bringing the brain, the central nervous system, and the spine of person to the table with the seed to the egg, right? Like that there is infrastructure that man is.
Yes.
But as my Aunt Jane said, God bless her, she died at almost 100. She said to me years ago, honey, what's the matter with women today? Don't they know they have to help a man be a good man?
and that's so true.
We have to be that, you know, if a man is the central nervous system and the brain and the spine, then we've got to come up around him.
Yeah. We're designed to be
together. Help hold him up.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes. So Dean, thank you. Thank you for being such a good man in the world. Thank you for being a man who has been fearless in tearing down the barriers, mind, heart, body, soul that you've recognized and continue to dismantle and reinvent for yourself. And thank you for being that as a husband and a father in the world. And thank you for being that in the world professionally for men to come to and seek. And I want to just remind everyone that they can learn more about you, Dean Colson, and the work that you do helping high performance men live holistically healthy at theleanwarrior.com, LEAN, theleanwarrior.com. com. And I thank you for being a guest on the show today. It's absolutely brilliant speaking with you every single time. And and if you're open to it, we would love to have you back again next quarter.
Absolutely, anytime. It's a pleasure, an absolute pleasure. I'm so grateful for you to invite me on. I'm honored. Thank you.
Absolutely,
much.
My honor. Have a wonderful day, and we'll talk to you again soon, Dean.
Okay, and you. Thanks, Rebecca. Take care.
Thank you. Peace.
Bye.
So brilliant. Such a great guy. Can't you just feel the love in him? Such a great spirit about him and care. You know he's been through something when he speaks, don't you? You can feel the years of experience, the years of challenge, but also the years of overcoming and building that tenacity. And I'm so grateful, as someone who does work heavily with women, I do work probably 7 to 3, in my work with women and men. And a lot of times it's the men of my women that are saying, okay, wait a minute, you got that to work in my wife? Well, hold on. let me talk to you maybe about me too. But it's wonderful to have someone like Dean in the world who is there providing alliance and advocacy and affirmation for the assertiveness and truth and certainty of men. Those words are going to stick with me, Dean Colson. The real function of man and operating mode is to be assertive and true and certain. Love it. Well, thank you so much. I didn't take us to a commercial break today because I was afraid that any technical issues would create problems coming back. So I was glad to be able to speak the whole way through, techie issues free. Grateful that you tuned in with us this week. We'll be back. Dr. Rocco A. Errico, Bible scholar, Aramaic in particular, teacher of the ancient, of the Semitic view and the Aramaic lens of Holy Scripture. We're going to be talking about his book as we start our new series on the third Tuesday of every month, named for that book, Let There Be Light. Let There Be Light. Dr. Rocco Errico is the founder of Noora Foundation, NOOHRA.com. And we will begin our series next week, January 17th at 2 p.m. Eastern, right here at greatiamradio.com. If you'd like to learn more about me and the work that I do with The Godly Woman, with Heaven on Earth Ministries, even with Great I Am Radio, please visit livinggodspromises.com. livinggodspromises.com will guide you to a link about the programs, services, offerings that we make available through The Godly Woman and Heaven on Earth Ministries, and even give you a chance to schedule sessions with me one-on-one if that's something that you'd like to do, is to consult with me as a holistic healthcare provider and purpose coach. It'd be my honor to serve you. Until then, until we see each other again, I pray that you are blessed, comforted, healed, and standing firm in the truth of your great I Am. Thank you for being with me this week, and I'll see you again soon. God bless you, and peace.